This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Good morning, Mr. Durham. How are you?
I'm well, Pack. Great to be back with you on a Thursday morning. We've got an excellent show. Holy smokes, we walked into one here on our fourth day back, haven't we?
I think they like us. I think they're just trying to keep us around because the guest today is an A-list guest list. I mean, it's really strong. And our man, Dino Babers, will lead things off in about a half an hour or so. He just released a statement yesterday. Very powerful. And, of course, we always enjoy talking football with him as well. So a lot to cover with the head football coach from Syracuse.
And then Jay Billis will spend some time with us. I'm very interested to hear Jay's take on the name, image, and likeness comments from Kevin White and Bubba Cunningham. And we can kind of compare and contrast a little bit, I think, of what he's thinking and maybe what the end game is going to be with name, image, and likeness. And on the back end of this at 9:30,
the Blue Ostrich makes his ceremonial return to Packer and Durham.
Tom Luganbill will join us. And he said something early in the pandemic that I'd like to revisit today. He said the teams that have the players that have the most passion for the game are going to be closer to go on opening day than any other. And I think there's a lot of truth in that, and I think we're getting ready to find out in the next month or so what teams really have players that want to play football and want to get better and want to win. And we're willing, as Louis Corolla told us yesterday, willing to pay the price during the pandemic with workouts and things like that.
Yeah, I would agree with everything you just said. But it'd be good to touch base with Lugs again. And, of course, that'll be at the tail end of the program. We have another confessional today, do we not, from what I understand? The coveted invite?
Apparently, yes, the coveted invite offers a quarantine confessional today, which she has been, as I understand, sheltering in place in Derby City. So we'll find out what Katie George has been up to during the quarantine and see what's happening on her front, too. I'm excited to visit with her and hear what the quarantine confessional is from Katie. No question about it.
That's coming up later on. All right, we have some baseball to get into momentarily. But Florida State had one player, by the way, tested positive for COVID-19. And you know, we've had a number of announcements. Again, the schools are basically staying away from any announcement. There's a lot of this stuff you get from insiders and so forth. This is not a surprise, right? I mean, listen, we've got over a gazillion cases, and you're going to get – everybody's going to get tested. There's no doubt about that. You'd rather know now than later. I mean, not that it's going to change anything from that perspective because you got to be smart and stay safe and healthy and everything else. But for everybody who's going through the process of the test, and I haven't talked about this on air, but I had a COVID-19 test about 2 weeks ago, and that's a story all to itself. Things are good, by the way, in case anybody's interested. But you know, this is going to happen to every student athlete as you now get back on campus. But I wouldn't wish that COVID-19 test on anybody. I'm just going to tell you that right now. It is not.
Well,
it ain't fun, Wes. It's not. And I could tell the story, and I probably should, but I'm not going to. But it's not fun.
I think that what we're finding out in college athletics, and I was given a term by somebody who works in the health profession. They're not a doctor, but they're somebody that works in health systems. And they said, what you're looking for, if you're kind of curious about the return to normal, is the ratios. So when I see that somebody has tested positive, fact like you, I'm not surprised, right? I mean, I'm just not surprised there's a positive test, and let's hope that asymptomatic or whatever the case may be, the recovery process is successful, right? We certainly don't want anybody to get really sick, and I know, good heavens, the tragedies and all the things that have happened in our country related to the coronavirus, our hearts go out to those folks. But at the same time, when somebody gets sick or somebody is diagnosed as positive, that's almost an expected by people in health systems. The question becomes, what's the ratios of those that are tested? For instance, X number of people tested, 230-something, 340-something, 500 and X. And then how many are positive out of that group? What the health system people who are following the virus are looking at is how many test positive out of how many you tested. And if they see a spike, then there's a big concern. If they see one or two pack, three or four, yeah, that's still three or four too many, but the ratio is not that high given the number that were tested. And so they feel like those environments are at least calmer environments, not volatile environments. And in talking to people who do this for a living or in health systems, they say there are volatile environments. And we saw it with our own eyes as a country with New York City and some other places in this country. And now we're seeing some states and things like that. But the reality of it is we're going to have people test positive. But what I think is important to remember here is everybody, including Florida State, including some other schools that have student athletes already come back, has got a plan in place to quarantine those student athletes or quarantine those positive tests. May not be student athletes, might be support staff, might be coaches, what have you. They quarantine those folks and they have a plan for their return and their monitoring. And I think that's an important aspect of how we ultimately end up with a successful athletic and hopefully academic year on the college level.
By the way, speaking of Brian Kelly with SVP, I thought he had an interesting comment and something that is going to be, I think, a factor as we get into this college football season.
Yep.
The challenges will be, you know, they're college students during the week, too. And so,
sure,
you know, making good decisions there is really where you're going to be challenged. And I think, quite frankly, it's on Thursday or Friday when you test and your starting quarterback has, you know, COVID-19, and the backup quarterback got six reps. But we got to get on the bus and we got to go play Clemson. So, you know, those are going to be the challenges that we have as we move forward.
Yeah, forgive me for laughing at that analogy. It just felt good to smile about the idea of you having to trot a backup into a game against Clemson.
Now, Wes, it's a very valid point,
yeah,
that Coach Kelly has, and I'm sure every coach in America is thinking about it. But do you think Clemson's on his brain? I mean, here we are in June, and the first thing that popped in his head, it wasn't the opener against Navy. That's now been moved from Dublin to Annapolis. It's not USC. It's not anybody else in the Irish play, everybody. But he went right to Clemson. So if you don't think the Tigers are on Brian Kelly's brain, you're out of your mind. I mean, that was the first thing that popped out of his head in terms of, man, my quarterback's sick. What are you talking about? We got to go play Clemson this weekend? Are you nuts? How are we going to handle that? But it is a legitimate question and concern, not only Brian Kelly, but as I mentioned, for every coach in America.
Are you surprised then Tim Lester in Western Michigan weren't right there at the front of his thinking, in other words?
Yeah, that one didn't quite come right to mind, did it? That wasn't quite there.
Here's kind of where I am with this pack, and I that's why I appreciate Brian Kelly's comment the other night with Scott on this, because I think as people that follow college football, and we do it for a living, and fans obviously follow it because they're passionate about the sport and their respective institution, I think you have to be prepared as somebody that's involved in college football one form or another to understand that it is possible that the star player or the very important player on your team may, in fact, get the virus in a Wednesday-Thursday test and not play that Saturday or the next Saturday. That's just the fate of where this is going to be in 2020. We keep saying, you know, how unique and how different will 2020 be? Well, that's certainly going to be one of them. And the virus cannot be eradicated by the time we're supposed to have toe meets leather in September, okay? I mean, we're doing a lot of positive things in this country and around the world to try and create a vaccine for the coronavirus. But more than likely, someone is going to test positive during the course of the season. And when they do, they're going to have to be quarantined. And again, I'll go back to the things that have been put in place on these campuses and by these programs in conjunction with the conferences. But what Brian Kelly is talking about is real and will happen. If it doesn't, then good for us, and you know, and the Lord looked after us, because the ratios and the percentages pack don't say that that's very likely. But I think every coach has already thought about that. And I think that you're going to see some very interesting dynamics come into play at certain schools with certain teams as a result of that. And again, I'll refer to something we said earlier in the week. I think the pro teams and the way that the NFL in particular goes about their business, college may try and emulate some of those practices too, in order to reduce the chances, if you will, of maybe somebody acquiring the coronavirus?
Whatever keeps you healthy. I'm all for it. Whatever it takes. You got to keep everybody mm-hmm. healthy. The Florida State player, by the way, asymptomatic, yep. in case folks were wondering. And because of the HIPAA regulations, you won't have an official spokesperson per se say, hey, here's all the details. So I think everybody kind of understands how that plays. One other thing before yeah. we go to break, baseball-wise, because the MLB amateur draft was last night, round one. And we talked about this briefly yesterday about how many ACC players had an opportunity to be picked. As it turned out, there were a bunch of them, Wes. And one of the dudes that you'll go through this list just joined us this week, and Bryce Jarvis, who's going to the D-backs. But Reed Detmer's out of sight, right? Everybody wanted him, and the Angels get him. And there you go, NC State. Let me just make sure I get something straight here. Because Patrick Bailey, let me tell you, my man, we are ready to roll. Come on down to San Francisco. We already got Joey Bart from Georgia Tech. Now we got Patrick Bailey. I'm going to take another ACC star from Florida State land. Buster Posey. I mean, I tell you what, the ACC coming out to the Bay Area, we're going to win ourselves some more championships. So, Patrick, can't wait to get you on the program, and we're good to go. Great pick by the Giants. Sensational. They finally listened to Elliot Avent and said, you know what? We need some power. We need another catcher. Who better than Patrick Bailey to lead the Giants to another World Series championship? And for the record, it's been 11,557 days since the Dodgers last won one. Just saying. But go ahead. Patrick Bailey, look at that. You don't think that's going to land? You don't think that one lands in McCovey Cove? You know it does, right? That one is going to land on Willie McCovey's statue. Man, we got ourselves a baller in the Bay.
I did not realize that that I was doing a morning show on the ACC network with the manager of the San Francisco Giants. I mean, you look like you're ready for a trip to the mound to make a pitching change.
Well, unfortunately, there's been a lot of this lately. There's been a lot of this lately. But we're starting to rebuild it back, and it's starting with homegrown ACC talent. Championship started with Buster Posey. Now we go Joey Bart, Georgia Tech, Patrick Bailey, NC State. You wonder why I love the Giants. It's all about the ACC, my man. All about it. Wait till we get Patrick on the show.
Are you you going to be headhunting some gear? Is that what you're going to be looking for?
You know, I'm not a gear guy. You know that. I'm not really a gear guy. But if Patrick wants to send me some stuff, you know I'm going to wear it. I mean, anybody send me anything, I'll probably wear it. You know how it goes.
Yeah. I do. I understand.
You like this, don't you?
All right. Well,
that's official.
Yeah,
too,
I do. I really do. I'm I know it's official.
Better?
I'm surprised you didn't. No. Oh no. Oh no. No. I'm not sure we need that one. I'm really hoping that Josh and Jen can pull a picture of you wearing the Giants hat, and we can make a baseball card out of it or something. Holy cow. All right, let's get to break. We got plenty.
How about Dino some of these Baker's other names, though? We're not going to go through these other names? Hold on. I may be a bit biased. I'll tell you when I'm slanted. I will be a bit biased when it comes to my Giants. But, I want to give shout-out, too, to Bobby Miller.
Wait
a minute. Wait. I want to give a shout-out to Bobby Miller, who's a pitcher for Louisville. Bobby, I'll pray for you.
Yeah.
I'll pray for Bobby Miller. I'm just going to tell you that right now.
Oh, jeez. All right,
Bobby,
let me add a couple things.
If you get traded to the Giants, it would be the best thing ever happened to you.
Reed Detmers to the Angels, by the way, listening last night to the draft with Carl Ravitch and everybody, there's a possibility that Reed Detmers is one of those guys that could be in the big club sooner than later, just given kind of the way things are setting up in the Angels organization. Jared Schuster, left-hander to the hometown Braves. Aaron Sabato, big-time first baseman, goes to Minnesota. And Slade Ciccone, a 33rd pick in the competitive balance round to the Diamondbacks. So D-backs go ACC twice, Pac. They know how to rebuild out in the desert. Get Bryce Jarvis and Slade Ciccone and six guys in the first round, throwing the seventh in the competitive balance, and a nice first round for the ACC last night.
Yeah, congratulations to all those guys. I'm kidding around, obviously, with Bobby Miller, but all of them well-deserved, and hope they do well, man. Rooting for every one of them. Very best.
Well, Skip, I'm looking forward to seeing how your team plays in its split squad games later today.
Well, listen, it's June the 11th, and who would have ever thought the Giants would still be tied with the Dodgers in the NL West? I mean, nobody thought that.
That's exactly right. Okay, as I was saying a moment ago, Dino Babers coming up bottom of the hour, Jay Billis at 9 o'clock, Tom Luganville at 9:30. When we come back, seven different winners in 7 years. Are we staring down the barrel of more coastal chaos? Packer and Durham on a Thursday morning continues with me and Bud Black right after this.
This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Packer and Durham. And Dino Babers is coming up here in about 15 minutes. I always look forward to having Coach on. And I read his statement yesterday, and it was powerful. And
wow, yeah.
He was great. I mean, we'll get into all that stuff with Coach.
Yep.
And not to mention talk about his team, because he's got, I think, 65 guys that are showing up this week on campus, and we'll go through all that stuff. But it's always great having Dino Babers on, and he's coming up here, as I mentioned, at the bottom of the hour. The infamous Coastal Division, Wes, in football has become almost legendary now that Virginia, with all the pressure in the world last year, Bronco Mendenhall's team makes it 7-for-7. Last 7 years, seven different teams have won the ACC's Coastal Division. And so I ask you, as we now reboot, since everybody's had a taste of the championship from that perspective, do we go back to square one? Is it a clean slate? I mean, how does this work with the rotation in the Coastal?
I think you got to wipe it clean, don't you? I mean, isn't that that's the only fair way? Everybody's had one, so now you go back and just say, okay, we're going to cycle through, and everybody's back to reset, right?
Well, given what we've gone through in 2020 with everything being scrubbed down and starting from scratch, per se, it may be apropos that's what we have for the 2020 version of the ACC's Coastal. But, you know, there are a couple teams that folks are already whispering about as far as teams to keep an eye on and favorites. And I think you'd have to start with North Carolina and Virginia Tech at the top. And no disrespect to anybody else. We know how this division works. Anything can happen. But with what those two teams have coming back, in terms of personnel, I think that's a logical conversation as far as where do you start. I think North Carolina, Virginia Tech, choose your poison on that one, either one. I think those will be probably the co-favorites as we head into 2020.
Well, let's see what your friends at FPI say about the Coastal Division, because I know you'll be excited to see this. They have listed Virginia Tech at 49%. Now, this is to win the FPI. Or to win the Coastal, rather, according to ESPN's Football Power Index. Carolina second at 34. Pack, the thing that catches my eye, and I know Clemson's the favorite to win the Atlantic, but it's like Virginia Tech, Carolina, and everybody else is, you know, working for a participation ribbon. I mean, Georgia Tech and Virginia all under, both under four, and then you get Miami, Duke, and Pittsburgh, and there's really no difference between really the other five behind the Hokies and the Tar Heels in this little drill, if you will.
I'm not buying it, Wes. I'm not buying it because, number one, of history in this division, and number two, I think Miami's good enough to win it. I think Pittsburgh's a team nobody ever seems to talk about. Their defensive line is going to be tremendous. Mm-hmm. Pat Narduzzi's got a quarterback, too. And, you know, again, nobody will talk about Pitt from that perspective. Duke's kind of flying underneath the radar a little bit. Chase Bryce comes rolling into town. The dude is a baller. Those numbers to me are like whatever. I mean, I know that's an ESPN FPI, and every time we've said FPI, your internet has frozen, so I'm almost reluctant to bring it up. But I think those other teams this side of Blacksburg and Chapel Hill all have a much better chance than 4% to win the division. I think those numbers are low.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, I think that really what has to happen, and we've seen it before, right, is teams that build early momentum. Somewhere in the month of September, what team is going to step forward to build that momentum, Mark? I think that's the real question we're looking at when it comes to the Coastal Division. Clemson is such a prohibitive favorite in the Atlantic that, you know, whether it's Louisville, whether it's Florida State, whether it's Dino Babers in Syracuse, that's going to have to, you know, germinate on their own as the season unfolds. I think the Coastal can be somebody that, you know, handles the card they're dealt in September, whether it be a conference game or in the case of Carolina at Central Florida and then Auburn and Atlanta. If the Tar Heels come out of that 2-0, then you're thinking entirely different about where they might be, right? But if Virginia Tech also, as you alluded to earlier in this week, beats Penn State, then all of a sudden you're thinking different about the Hokies. So I think momentum can be built for a Coastal favorite in September. I'm not sure you can win it in September, but if you don't get any kind of early thump, I think it becomes a little bit of a difficult proposition beyond that.
Don't have any issue with, as I mentioned, North Carolina, Virginia Tech being your 1-2, whatever combination you want, just based on numbers coming back, momentum, and all that other stuff. But I think everybody else on that list, based on the FPI numbers, are really underselling Miami, mm-hmm. Duke, and Pittsburgh in particular. And, of course, here's Virginia, who, again, Bronco has done a nice job building in Charlottesville. What was it, 0.7% was the number for the Hoos? I know the schedule's tough. That's almost like completely disrespectful.
Is that also an indication of where everybody thinks Virginia's going to be without Bryce Perkins? Because they still got guys. I mean, Talapapa's back. You know, they got wide receivers. They got offensive line people back. I mean, Charles Snowden we visited with yesterday, they still got guys on defense who've played. I know Bryce Hall's gone. I know they've lost some talented people up front. Eli Handback, certainly one of those guys. But, I mean, let's be honest. Virginia has done some things to make inroads in this league. It's not just a flash for Bronco Mendenhall. But, you know, I think Perkins just bailed so much of the water for him on offense that I think people think without Bryce Perkins, they can't possibly be contenders. I'm going to tell you something, Pat, a little history lesson here. I saw this happen 20 years ago. Georgia Tech lost Joe Hamilton after the 1999 season. He was the runner-up for the Heisman Trophy. You remember this. He was the runner-up to Ron Dayne for the Heisman Trophy. He was the ACC Player of the Year. And everybody thought there is no possible way in 2000 that Georgia Tech is going to be any good. And they went 9-3 behind the efforts of George Godsey at quarterback. I mean, they had a remarkable year, and it's a team that kind of bought in to not only Godsey's ability and the differences from Hamilton, but how many different times have we seen it play out in college football? That's just 20 years, and I'm thinking about it off the top of my head. You can go back and pick schools along the way where that's happened. And I think Virginia is certainly capable of contending in the Coastal. They're not a 0.7 or whatever FPI has them listed in any way, shape, or form in my mind.
Totally agree. Let me ask you this question. Well, we sit here and debate, and again, it's only June, right? A lot of stuff is going to change between now and kickoff. Forget about who you think is going to win the Coastal. Let me ask you this question. Who's going to come in last in the Coastal? I think, to me, that's a harder question to answer, as goofy as that sounds. If based on the FBI, they're telling me it's Virginia, you know what? I would take that bet and say, I don't believe Virginia is going to come in last place. I don't. And I don't know what they're going to do at quarterback. But well, I think that's a harder question to answer.
I think of, I'll be honest with you, Pac, I think the way that you have to look at the Coastal Division, and look, Georgia Tech only won 3 games last year, and I thought they were better toward the end of the year than they were at the front of the year. And granted, Jeff Collins and his staff, you know, reinvigorated a little bit of that program. They had some momentum. Obviously, the Miami win. They beat NC State on a Thursday night. They bring back a lot of that team from a year ago. David Curry returns at linebacker. You just saw J.P. Mason. James Graham at quarterback. They've got a solid recruiting class. They'd like to think that might be able to fill some spots as well. Amarian Brown did some nice things for them in the receiving game a season ago. Charlie Thomas and some of these guys are back. Okay, but here's the problem. Have you looked at their schedule,
mm-hmm.
Pac? Holy smokes. I mean, they might be a better football team, but might not have anything to show for it because, I mean, they're playing the 27 Yankees, the 72 Dolphins, and the 85 Bears, man. I mean, they're playing some football teams this year.
They are definitely going to be a better football team this year than they were a year ago. I have no doubt. We've had a chance to talk, obviously, to Jeff Collins. We had the strength coach on yesterday. Anytime you get a new coach, it's going to take a while, not to mention the transition of the way they played. We talked about that a lot last year, a bunch, right? you know, you go from Paul Johnson to what Jeff Collins is going to do. Hey, they've now had a year to implement that style. And I know we've had the pandemic and everybody's been off kilter here for the last 3 months. But if they're not better this year, I will be stunned. I totally expect Georgia Tech to be better. Now, I'm not going to tell you I'm picking them to win the division. They're not there yet, in my opinion. But to think that they're just going to be an absolute cupcake layup, I think that'd be a terrible mistake. And you pointed out the teams they beat down the stretch with NC State and Miami last year. That Miami game on the road still is one of those you shake your head. I know you did the game as one of the all-timers. So I think Jeff Collins has momentum. They're recruiting well. The brand, which he's talked about a bunch. Again, 1 year of the system. I totally expect Georgia Tech to be a much better football team in 2020.
Yeah, I agree with you, but the concern I would have, and Jeff said this when he was with us, is the schedule, right? I mean, who they're playing. I mean, Notre Dame and Georgia, their non-conference games in particular, you know, they're starting off with Clemson at home. They go to Virginia Tech. I mean, you know, there are all sorts of elements. They play in Chapel Hill against Carolina. It's going to be significant.
But, Wes, to me, if you're Jeff Collins and you're Georgia Tech, you know what? That's a selling tool. Hey, you know, it's a new sheriff in town. There's a new vibe. There's a new energy. They're playing a different game than they did for 100 years under Paul Johnson. It's no knock on Paul. He had great success there. But when you get a chance to say, hey, listen, we're going to go play people. You know, you just mentioned Clemson, Notre Dame, Georgia. I mean, those are three teams that as we get into the season, you're going to hear all three of those names mentioned as far as college football playoff teams. So, to me, that is a selling tool, not to mention a great academic institution, what they've done from a facility standpoint. You're selling Atlanta and a change. And, again, the whole branding. We talk about name, image, and likeness. We'll get into that with Jay Billis. You know, I think it's right now is kind of a fun time in Atlanta with Georgia Tech. They've not reached the finish line, obviously, but you kind of like the direction that they're heading in my opinion. I think they will, again, be much better this year than they were last year.
Yep. Well, we'll see what happens. We'll keep breaking the Coastal apart here, and going to be fun to see kind of how it evolves itself, especially through the first month of the regular season.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday. Social Security, is that a thing? Hey, Mom, what is my Social Security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
The great thing about facts, they're proven. Like the fact that crude oil contains impurities. Or that base oil made from natural gas is 99.5% free of impurities. And the fact that Pennzoil is the first synthetic motor oil made from natural gas, not crude oil. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil. Based on Sequence 4A wear test using SAE 5W30.
This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Dino Babers coming up here momentarily. We look forward to having Coach on and talk about a number of things with Coach, up and above just his football team.
Yeah, he made a very, very powerful statement yesterday about what's going on in our country here in the last 2 weeks. And you and I have gotten to know Dino Babers pretty well, Mark, and I'm telling you, this is a guy who I think the world of just from a standpoint of what he tries to do with his football program, but also the way he lives his life. And I think there's a lot to be said about that. And he had a very, very powerful statement to not only the Syracuse community, but the rest of the country about, you know, what it means to be an African-American head football coach, the responsibilities involved, and how this country can get better. And I think that's one of the things you and I talked about this week with whether it be Marvin Wilson or Charles Snowden yesterday or Bryce Jarvis the other day or Amir Sims, right? I mean, it's this is about how this country gets better, and his statement, I thought, reflected a lot of that.
Yep, there's no question about that. And, of course, they're looking for a bounce-back year in 2020. Needless to say, there was huge expectations on the program last season, and he'd be the first one to admit that they didn't reach those standards and want to be better. And, you know, when things fall into place like they did the year before, and all of a sudden you're a double-digit winning team, People got a sense and a taste of what that success feels like. And you know what? People were excited about Syracuse football. And he's a dynamic personality. They play fun football. And again, it'd be cool to see Syracuse get back to that level. Again, it'd be great for the league, be great for Syracuse. And we'll see how all that plays out.
Yeah, 5-7 a year ago is not what they wanted. And at times really good and at times frustratingly ineffective. And I know that bothered him. He's got some new coordinators on his staff. We'll talk to him about that along with how about the momentum of the building? News yesterday, by the way, from Central New York that the reference to the building where Syracuse plays football and basketball is now the stadium and not the dome, Mark. I saw that and I thought, okay. So maybe we're getting a little more out of this renovation project than what John Whitehack promised us or told us he might show us.
That will I will tell you, for a trillion years, you've always called it the Carrier Dome. That will take a while to adjust from not only just the Carrier Dome to the dome to now the stadium. But, you know, when John was on with us, when we were up there, they were really excited about the changes they were going to make. And, again, we talk about facility upgrades all the time with the ACC around the country. And Syracuse is no different. I mean, the Carrier Dome has been legendary. Some incredible football games, some unbelievable basketball games, lacrosse, needless to say. But it'll be kind of cool to see the renovations that are made there. And, you know, Dino still likes to keep it hot, though, doesn't he? He was like, hey, man, we got an advantage when you have to come play us in the Loud House.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think that's I think the air conditioning being invited into that process will certainly benefit the broadcasters, if you know what I mean. But at the same time, I think that light too.
Speaking of light and heat and power, did we lose our man Wes Durham again? I think we did. You know what? But the good news is we're going to do a trade. We lose Wes Durham, but we bring on the coach, Dino Babers. Coach, how are you?
Pack, how you doing, man?
I am great. We just lost Wes. We'll get him back here in a second. But I will tell you, this is the first time we've done a Zoom interview with a guy on the phone as well. So you're breaking ground again with us. Telephone in hand and yet still on television.
Are you telling me you haven't done this thing with Coach Sweeney first?
No. No, you're ahead of Dabo on that front. You are absolutely leading the pack on that deal. By the way, before, let's get to some serious topics before we get to your football. Your statement yesterday was really powerful. And the thing I appreciate the most about it, Coach, was you mentioned the fact that – there's Wes. All right. The thing that I enjoyed the most about it was you talked about, you know what, there was a delay, but there was a reason for the delay. And that is the fact that you had to give this a lot of thought, prayer, you listen to people, you talk to people. And I just think in this day and age where everybody wanted an immediate response, the fact that you took your time to say, listen, I want to get this part right, I appreciate you doing that.
Well, I tell you what, it's something that needs to get right. And I have think tanks just like everyone else, and it's important, I think, to find out how other people feel about it, and that's on both sides of the field.
Have you felt already the pain and anguish from your student-athletes, your football players who are on campus? Because it's been interesting to watch the young people really take ownership of the fact that they really do have a voice and a platform and a chance to make change here.
I'll tell you what, the young people of America, the young people of today, the athletes, the way they go after things is like they're running down there on a kickoff and nobody's got content. I mean, I'm really proud of the movement, the way these young people are going after it, all races, all colors. I mean, but I hope they don't get rid of all the old people. I still think we have some wisdom and knowledge that might be able to help them pedaling the bicycle. Maybe they'll just let us steer a little bit. But it's been fantastic. It's really been enlightening.
Hey, Coach, it's Wes. I hope you're well. I hope your family's doing well during this unique time. I am curious, what have you shared with your team about your experiences in doing all this?
Okay, Wes, I'm gonna get into that a little bit, but I've never seen an announcer disappear like the Avengers. You know, like when the guy snapped his fingers in the movie and all of a sudden he just disappeared. And you're like, oh, no, I don't want to go out this way. That was really – do that again. That was really cool.
You're unbelievable.
We're all wishing all we could do that, Coach. All right, Wes, go ahead.
Tell me the message you gave to your team, and because, I mean, there's nobody more I respect in terms of their background, their upbringing, and the kindness and the things that you stand for as a person, let alone a football coach. And I thought of that when I knew you were going to join us, and I've been thinking about you during the last couple of weeks because you always strike me as somebody that has had enough life experience and enough different places in this world that I think you could share some very, very unique viewpoints and unique stories with your football team and with young people, period, about what this is that this country's trying to achieve.
You know, I really do want to talk a lot about this, but I can't talk the way I want to because we had some things happen here, and I really haven't spoken to the team totally about this. We have had a baby Zoom call, and we talked about some things. And they really express the, I would say the anger or of what this whole purpose was. And they really moved me. And they brought me to a point of growth and reflection. And and that's what made me really push to get that thing out. I was going to let one go, but I wanted to do it on my own time, but but after talking to the team on the baby Zoom call, I just felt like, and I asked permission to let that thing go a little bit early. But I haven't had an opportunity to talk to the whole football team based off of how we come in to the process of COVID-19. And we'll probably be getting together soon, but we haven't been able to do that. So I can't share that with you yet.
Well, Coach, again, like I mentioned, I appreciate you saying that because I thought, to be honest with you, our profession, the media, to be critical of us as a whole, there were too many people in the media that were looking for an immediate answer. And I thought that was a mistake. It was like, hey, wait a minute. Everybody has to process this differently. You know, an African American is going to process it completely different than a guy like myself. And, you know, you talked about, like I said, you listened. You talk to people, you prayed over this thing, you got to go through it. There is no finish line here, but you got to figure out a way. How do you figure out what to do and make this a call to action that all of us can be better, regardless of your economic background or the color of your skin or beliefs? We all have to come together and understand, hey, we're all in the same fight here, man. Let's figure out a way to make this a win-win proposition.
You know, absolutely. I was reading this morning about Solomon, and he could ask for anything in the world, and the thing he asked for was wisdom and knowledge to lead people. And I don't know about how much wisdom, but you can always acquire knowledge, and always feel that knowledge is the power. You need to educate yourself about situations. You need to think about and process situations so that if it ever comes up, you may be able to make the right choice.
I want to switch gears and talk about your football team here in the final few minutes we've got with you. In some of the changes you've made, what were you looking for and what did you achieve with some of these moves you made, in particular with your staff? I see these coordinators come in and both of them come in with flash resumes and guys who look like they fit not only what you've done there at Syracuse, but where you also want to go as a football program.
You know, you always have a vision, and you don't know if it's right, but you're going to burn the bridges behind you, and you're going to keep moving forward. That's always been the way that I've tried to do it. The offensive coordinator, Sterling Gilbert, is someone that's experienced. He started with me in the beginning with Jimmy Garoppolo, I laugh because I love Sterling. He's a fabulous person, good coach. But there's parts of him that are not like me and parts of me that are not like him. But what he's strong at, I appreciate. And what I'm weak at, he's very strong at. And together we've been very, very good. So I expect us to get better on that side of the ball. We need to get better on that side of the ball. And it's
it's unfortunate that we didn't get an opportunity to get the other 12 practices in spring to get it going. It may take a little while once the season started, but I expect this to be a really, really, really good combination between him and I on offense. And then when it comes to the defensive side of the ball, I think the world of Coach White. Tony's a young up-and-comer. He's been trained by Herm Edwards out there at Arizona State and Rocky Long at San Diego State, Herm at Arizona State, two schools that I've actually worked at. And he graduated from UCLA. He's seen big-time ball. He's played big-time ball. He's been on some fabulous football teams. And just his maturity and the way he stands and leads young men when he's out in the front. You guys better write this name down. And he's going to be around for a while. I really think he's going to be one of the guys that's going to be a mover and shaker when it's all said and done.
Coach, when you drive by the old Carrier Dome, the old dome, which is now the stadium, give us an eyeball view here. What's the place look like?
You know, during the pandemic, I've had some time. And, you know, more time than I've had in a long, long time, probably since college. But I've ran down there. Let me back up. I've walked down there from my house. I've drove down there from my house. And it is coming along. It's the one project in our city that did not stop during the pandemic. The governor was great enough to keep that thing going as a priority. And, I mean, they are on time, and this thing is going to get finished, and it's going to be something. Now, I'm not happy about the air conditioning, but I may have to go and run for a – I may have to run for a – I might have to run for a political office to get that thing out of there. But everybody else, the other 99.9% people are really happy about it.
Well, I'm going to just say this one last thing now. Since we've been, again, you know, we went on 87 days without doing a live show. And I'm just looking down the ACC's Atlantic Division. Clemson, Dabo, no. Doran, no. Satterfield, no. Clawson Awake, no. Halfley, BC, no. Norvell, Florida State, no. Dino Babers, leader in the clubhouse in the ACC Atlantic Division on Packer and Durham. That's all I'm going to tell you.
All I know is those guys got so much closing power, I got to get out of the blocks earlier. I don't understand.
In closing, can I just say that I would be the in the 99.9% that are glad there is air conditioning in the stadium?
You know what? I knew you media guys would go to the other side.
Oh, man. Hey, thanks for the time. Always great to see you. And be well, stay safe, and we'll catch up soon. Really appreciate it.
Hey, you guys have a good one. It's always a pleasure.
All right. Dino Babers. Dino Babers, head football coach at Syracuse.
Wes, yeah. Hold on. Before we get to the promo, in a span of 48 minutes into this show, we've seen you disappear like the Avengers, as Coach said. We've done an interview on Zoom that we couldn't get audio, but we did it via phone. And so we are really breaking ground today from a technical standpoint. And I just want to point out to everybody, you're in Cartersville, Georgia. I'm down here in the basement. And the folks that are putting this on behind the scenes have done an unbelievable job to get us up and moving. Because, you know, folks don't understand. We get this question all the time. And you guys, why is West in Georgia? Bristol's shut down for the most part. So we are really... It's a high wire act putting all this stuff together, and it's been brilliant for the folks behind the scenes to get us moving. So I just want folks to understand that while they're watching us.
Yeah, no question. And they've done a phenomenal job, Drew and Josh and Jen, especially trying to get our program up and running. And that goes for everybody at ACC Network, which, by the way, is a nice segue to the promo. And that's ACCN Football in Primetime presented by GEICO. And we've got a good one for you coming up on Saturday night. We'll take you back to November 28, 1998. Virginia and Virginia Tech, two top 20 teams. The comeback starts at 7 o'clock Eastern right here on ACC Network and the ESPN app. When we come back, a segment we kind of talked about yesterday briefly, the FCS opponent in the reset of college football, what is it going to be like to try and get FCS opponents scheduled or canceled? We'll talk about that when Packer and Durham continues.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.
GEICO has the insurance industry-leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere, which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
GEICO, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham, 844-SAY-ACCN. Again, many thanks to Dino Babers who just joined us. Coming up top of the hour, Jay Billis. We'll have some name, image, and likeness issues to discuss with Jay, and who knows what else we'll get into. Tom Luganville will also join us coming up in hour number two around 9:30 this morning on the program. And then tomorrow, Wes, we got some stuff going on here tomorrow.
T-shirt Friday.
Oh, yeah. I got to make a note of that. But we got up and above T-shirt Friday, guest-wise, tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. Trevor Lawrence and Darian Richard will be here tomorrow. Is that kind of where you were going with that?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't too concerned about T-shirt Friday, but I was more excited about having Darian and Trevor on with us because they are two of the four Clemson football players that have decided, hey, you know what, let's do something cool and have an impact. Mm. There's going to be a protest march on Saturday in which the players have gone out to local businesses, the police, the president of the institution, President Clements, and said, hey, listen, this is something we want to do. And so Saturday evening at 6 p.m., it's going to be interesting to see what it goes. I may even make a road trip. Go see that. I'm thinking about going down there and checking that out.
Amir Sims, I think, also reflected with us the other day that he was going to be part of that, right?
Yep, no question. Athletes are going to be involved. The locals will be there. And, again, this has happened on numerous campuses all over the country, but the Clemson players decided, hey, let's do something. And, you know, I think, again, young people taking ownership. We've kind of harped on that all this week. It's refreshing. Yep. I think it's energizing. And hopefully people are paying attention. I really hope they are.
Yeah, so Trevor Lawrence and Darian Rencher of the Tigers tomorrow with Packer and Durham on our Friday show as we close the week. And more stuff as well. Tom Luganville and Jay Billis coming up in the next hour. Mark, we touched on this briefly yesterday, and I think it's going to come back into play now as we kind of reset for the 2020 football season. And that is kind of where these FCS opponents sit, not just with ACC schools, but nationally as well. And I don't know if you saw this, but the story emerged yesterday about the University of Connecticut appearing on a couple of ACC non-conference ledgers in the future, and clause in the contract with their athletic director, Mr. Benedict, and also I think with Syracuse and both with North Carolina that agreed to these series, that for some reason if UConn were to drop back to FCS, those games could be then removed from the schedule of those respective schools. I thought it was interesting to look at just FCS football as a whole, because when we were having discussions earlier in the pandemic about the potential of reducing the number of games played this year, very quickly the FCS game was being scratched by many people in their speculation. And I understand that because of the non-conference games that exist, and some of those have more value than others. But you start to wonder kind of how FCS football fits, not only in the world of Power 5 football, but how does it fit with the FBS schedule going forward, I think?
Well, let's be honest. We're all hoping for a 12-game regular season for everyone. But if it is going to have a scenario that you've got a reduction, somebody has to be first, and in my opinion, this is an easy call for the most part. Again, every school's got their own individual decision to make on that front. But I think as a whole, this is going to be the game that's going to get cut, Wes. I don't know why people would be shocked to hear that. It is what it is. If you want to schedule an FCS team, hey, that's up to you. Certain teams do it more often than others. People have a different philosophy of how you should schedule. But if there's going to be a cut in the regular season, To me, that's naturally the first team is going to get cut. I don't think that's a reach. To me, that's not surprising.
No, and I think what it's going to be interesting is we get to the top of the hour and Jay Billis here in a moment, but I think it's going to be interesting to see kind of how the discussions go with these games as we move forward. I just think these games are a little more vulnerable now than maybe they've been really in recent memory. They've just kind of also been an added piece to the schedule every year, that kind of thing. It's understood, so on and so forth. But I get the kind of idea that maybe the vulnerability out there is a little higher than it's been certainly in previous years, for sure.
Well, it should be.
All right. Stay tuned.
Go ahead.
Yep. When we come back, Jay Billis starts hour two of Packer and Durham on a Thursday. Name, image, and likeness and more coming up with the Billustrator right after this on ACC Network.
This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.